from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Backstreet's
back, all right. When in doubt, talk football. It carries the country. People care about what's happening in the game of football, even if it's not their team, even if it's not their part of the country. There are always storylines, and it's now become year-round.
I have some very urgent and important breaking news.
It's so much more all access, and people care so much more about every little detail, to the point where it's no longer just the head coach's fault. Now it can be the offensive or defensive coordinator's fault, or that, well, of course, it's always the referee's fault.
Not the refs. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Have similar tastes in music. If I'm making my list of pros and cons, another check in the pro column for Colton. I'm sure he's thrilled. You should see his face right now. It just lit up like a Christmas tree. It's a Thursday morning. Good morning to you. You're welcome for the BSB. I used to be a closet fan. Out of the closet I've been now for the last 10 years. Backstreet Boys dominate. And if we were talking about best boy band hair, well, they'd certainly have some claims. But instead, we're sticking to athletes. And we're going best hair, not worst hair. In honor of Joe Burrow, we don't pick on people for what they look like. And also, I kind of say this every now and then. Not that I don't care about my husband's opinion, but it's my hair. So if I like it and it's comfortable for me and it makes me happy, then what does it matter to anybody else? And I kind of feel that way about hair. So good for you, Joe Burrow. Maybe being blonde gives him more confidence. I mean, he certainly sounds like he's confident right now, and it might have something to do with the new do.
Hey, you grow and learn every year. You know, I know I'm pretty damn good.
Oh.
I have been. Can continue to improve year to year, day to day. And I think that's how you have to approach it. I'm focused on continued improvement, and I'm really happy with the offseason that I have. I'm really happy to have this training camp to continue to hone my skills and improve and, you know, build this team chemistry for this run we're about to go on.
It's got to be the hair. I'm pretty damn good. I have been. I will continue to improve. And, oh, this run we're about to go on. I like it. How about you stay on the field for an entire season, and I'm with you, man. I do believe you can go on a run. And just while we're bringing back some funny stuff, some funny business from Bengals camp, did you all see the clip with Ja'Marr Chase? This is amazing. So Ja'Marr was interviewed for one of those, I think it's the NFL Top 100, right, where they ask players about who they think are the top five top players in the league. And so in this case, they sit Ja'Marr Chase down and they ask him about the top quarterback in the NFL as they're counting down the NFL's top 100. And, well, he balked a little bit. This is on NFL Films. It's awesome.
I'm not saying him. I give credit when it's due, but I'm not saying his name. I'm not saying his name, brother. I'm sorry. Joe Burrow. I'm not saying that guy's name. He's good. He's amazing. He's good. Not gonna lie. I'm salty, though. I'm a little salty. 2 years in a row. But I'm putting Burrow first.
So good. I love how honest he is. But here's the funny part. Do you really think that by not saying the name Patrick Mahomes, it's somehow going to change everything? Nah, it's not. How quickly do you think, Colton, that clip got back to the Chiefs?
Very fast.
Oh, yeah. Like within minutes. As soon as it could be, well, once it was out there by NFL Films, they put it out as a clip on social. Of course, it right away would have popped up on the phones of the Chiefs. So unless they were actually on the field and didn't have access to their phones, it got to Patrick Mahomes within minutes.
These guys better figure it out there in Cincinnati. There's a lot of talk out of Cincinnati. A little cocky. And again, I get Joe Burrow's very good, but mm-hmm, I saw a video at a Bengals camp, the same Bengals camp that these two are talking at. And yeah, it didn't look so pretty. Joe Burrow already had the defensive line in his lap already, so they better figure that out in Cincinnati.
This is amazing, though. Come on. To the victors, go the spoils. And Patrick Mahomes, first of all, is going to get a kick out of that. He's not going to get mad. This is not bulletin board material. No, instead, it's validation that what you've done and who you are and how you've played is frustrating as all get out for Ja'Marr Chase. Yeah, so he will not say the name. He's asked about the best quarterback in the league, and he will not say the name.
I'm not saying him. I give credit when it's due, but I'm not saying his name. I'm not saying his name, brother. I'm sorry. Joe Burrow. I'm not saying that guy's name. He's good. He's amazing. He's good. Not going to lie. I'm salty, though. I'm a little salty. 2 years in a row. But I'm putting Burrow first.
Terrific. Good for you, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase. I actually think it helps that they have public enemy number one. It helps that they have extra motivation, that they can view the Chiefs as the evil empire. And, of course, the Chiefs are good with that. It still makes me laugh every time I think about the Raiders and how they celebrated as though they had won the Super Bowl on Christmas Day, 2023. And from that point on, and granted, they made the Chiefs offense look bad. Now, partly the Chiefs offense just looked bad because they played badly, but they were raucous. They were over the top. They were over the moon. And what happens after that? The Chiefs rattle off 6 straight wins. That was the last time Kansas City lost. The next time we see a team celebrating on their field, oh, wait, it's the Chiefs who just won the Super Bowl in Las Vegas. And actually, I think that Christmas Day game was in Kansas City, if I remember correctly. But a little bit of payback, if you will. So yeah, the Chiefs welcome this. And when I say how quickly do you think it took to get back to Kansas City, no doubt they're having a grand old time yucking it up at what they hear from Ja'Marr Chase. But he's right. Now, they didn't make the playoffs last year. They were above 500, though, even without Joe for, I guess, the last, was it, gosh, last 6 games. So he had his wrist surgery in November. But yeah, the year before, the Chiefs took out the Bengals in the conference championship. That was the 23-20 game. And the year before that, they took them out. Oh, well, also in the conference championship. I'm talking about it. So yeah, the Chiefs have been that brick wall they've run into. Of course, I still say the last few years, it's better to be the Bengals than the Bills, considering what's happening with them. So yes, a little bit of gamesmanship, even early on. I wonder if Ja'Marr Chase thought about it when he was saying it, how quickly he would have that clip go viral. But I think it's awesome. I love that he's so honest about it. I can't. It hurts too badly. I can't even say the dude's name. Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is the best quarterback in the NFL. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Who's got the best hair? Hi, Joe Burrow. A-Law Radio or our Facebook page. So we were talking about the Saquon Barkley, speaking of being on tape. So Saquon Barkley, he's told his story multiple times. He's been respectful. I don't think he's done one of those FUs to the Giants. He may feel like that behind closed doors, but I don't know, unless I've missed something, it doesn't feel like he has been nasty about it or done anything except just be grateful mostly for what the Eagles have given him, which is a second chance, a great contract. Obviously not the one that the Giants expected because they kind of felt like it'd be okay for him to go out there and find a new path since they were pretty confident nobody else was going to pay him either. So I'm happy for Saquon. And I feel like because he's happy, he's not in a position where he feels like he needs to rip the Giants. But he has been honest about it. He has told the truth, the way that he interprets what happened with Joe Shane, the general manager of the Giants, before he was free, set free, go be free to find your own deal. And essentially, what he said is that Joe told him they were out. They were done. They go find something else because we're not going to give you the contract that you're looking for. So he's not ripped them, but he's been pretty honest about how that breakup went with New York.
I feel like the Giants thought I was going to go out there and get 9, maybe 8, stretch at 10, and then I'll come back to them. And it's like, all right, well, we got you. If you want to come play at 9, you can come play at 9, which I think that truly would have got it done. I think that's just where they valued me at, or Joe valued me at. That's what he had, the price point where he was willing to pay, and he wasn't going to go over to it. And, you know, kudos to him for sticking to his gut. But yeah, that's how I feel. And I kind of felt like it was like, you know, kind of a little disrespectful, to be honest, because it's kind of like a slap in the face. But you go see what you are worth, and then if you're worth that, we'll see if you're worth it, and maybe we'll match it.
Yeah, I feel like any human in his shoes would have felt the exact same way. Now, it turns out the Eagles give him a 3-year deal worth just under $38 million. The majority of it is guaranteed, $26 million guaranteed. A great deal for him, especially when, you know, a lot of the talking points over the last few years about running backs, other than Christian McCaffrey, has been, we're undervalued. We're not getting paid what we're worth. We're doing the yeoman's share of the work in the backfield. We're getting pounded. We're doing everything you ask of us. But then because we have so many carries and because we have so much mileage and because we've done what you've asked us to do when we're younger, well, we end up forfeiting money and contracts and value when we're older. It's kind of a catch-22. But in Saquon's case, the Eagles were eager to bring him on board. Now, here's where it kind of gets interesting with Hard Knocks. Maybe a cautionary tale to other players in the NFL. So he was watching a trailer for an upcoming episode of Hard Knocks, and he actually saw part of the conversation that he had with the Giants GM, Joe Shane, in which Joe said to him, kind of what I was doing before, paraphrasing, but, you know, hey, go ahead, test that free agent market. And so not only did Saquon engage in the actual conversations, but then he watched it play out on the show.
I didn't really watch too much of it. I watched the one episode, I think it was episode 3. But yeah, like I said on like a podcast, give respect to Hard Knocks. I think they did a really good job. I think it was a unique way to see in the, you know, how free agency is like in a building in NFL for fans. I got to see a little bit prior to when it all came out, but it was unique. It was different seeing it from that point of view.
I can imagine. Not only did you engage in it, but then you kind of watch it from a third person perspective and the realization that everybody else is watching it from that perspective. But again, he can afford to be generous. He can afford to be gracious because he's got a deal and he's speaking from Eagles training camp. So he said he would stop short of saying he was surprised by it, but he also did say this. I thought this was interesting. Having gone through the whole situation himself, he felt like Hard Knocks portrayed it accurately, where they didn't try to spin it. They didn't turn it into something it wasn't. They didn't make it more acrimonious. What they did was show that he and the Giants had come to this point where they weren't going to pay him more, but that Saquon had kind of done his due diligence. He had indicated that he'd prefer to stay with the Giants, and they just weren't willing to pay him. So there's a lot of different pieces that come together here, but I do love the fact that Saquon is taking the high road, number one. Number two, he's being honest, and also there's no need for him to be a jerk about it. No need for him to be vengeful because he's got the contract now and he's got a fresh start and he feels valued by the Eagles. It's a little bit like a breakup of sorts. And I'm talking relationships now, not teams. It's a lot easier to take the high road about a previous significant other, even one who treated you poorly, when you have already found a new love and you are happy. So you could talk to, I mean, I'll put me in this situation. You could talk to me. You could talk to any random female who's gone through a breakup. And once we find someone new and we feel loved and we feel appreciated, well, then we don't need to trash the dude who was the jerk. Nah, you move on. And when you truly have moved on and you can hear that Saquon Barkley has, there's not the bitterness left. You're just ready to leave that past in the past. But unfortunately for him, I guess it was carried on Hard Knocks. And so other people got to see it. But also they now know that his story that he told was true about how the Giants were dealing with him or didn't want to deal with him. One more New York football note. Aaron Rodgers. He is, I don't know if I'd say he's taking the high road. He is confirming the reports that, yes, in fact, he did skip mandatory minicamp because he was out of the country on vacation.
Did you get fined?
Yeah.
Do you think Robert needed the mandatory amount? That's, I think it's 50.
Oh, I mean, I think it might have been a little more than that. You know, I had talks with all my teammates about it. I think they understood it was obviously more of an issue outside the building than it was inside the building. Robert and I are great.
It's more of an issue. He always has to do that. He always has to act like he's the most important piece of conversation going. I suppose he doesn't really understand what else is happening in our world right now. But anyway, Aaron Rodgers did get fined $50,000. I'm not sure what he means. Maybe there's interest on it. But he did get fined because he had a planned vacation to Egypt and it created a scheduling conflict, if you will. There was a conflict of interest. He was choosing Egypt over his mandatory OTAs. And what he's tried to say already this week is that, oh, they're just practices. They just slap the mandatory part on it because they have to under NFL rules. He's like, they just take two random practices in June. I think it was June, May, who knows. And they call them mandatory. Well, I suppose that's true, except they always do happen to be in the same 2-week period every year. So it's still on you, Mr. King of the Jets, to recognize that your vacation was likely to conflict with the mandatory minicamp. But I'm glad that the Jets are still in this practice of whatever Aaron wants, Aaron gets. We're good. It's all good. But what else can they say, though, Colton, when you consider they built their entire roster around him last year? He lasted 4 whole snaps. And now they're essentially trying to run it back with him, minus the injury, because they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. I mean, they've got coaches and other contracts that are essentially based on Aaron Rodgers being an MVP and leading them to the promised land. And what else were they going to do? They were going to wait for him to come back and hope that a year later, with an Achilles injury in his past, he's still the same QB. They've been in a holding pattern for a year.
It's the Jets. It's the best way to describe it. It's the Jets. I got buddies that are Jets fans. I'm like, of course this happens to you guys. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah. I just
still though, from the category of you can't make the stuff up.
Yeah, but they also can't get out of their own way, Amy. No. Like, it's just like, you okay, apparently Salah knew that he was going to Egypt, and yet you come out, yeah, Aaron's not here. What are you doing? They just can't, like, you made it a story, and like, you just heard from Rodgers just now, and he goes, yeah, they knew, and teammates knew, like, okay, well, what did the coach not understand? Like, you made it a big deal that Aaron wasn't there.
And it was it was unexcused. Like, that was the thing,
yes,
too.
And then he comes back the next day, like, nope, it's too late. It's too late, Sal. You already botched this one. Like, I don't get how they can't get out of their own way, the Jets, and this
well,
is what
people
they are.
Would have noticed that Aaron wasn't there.
No, but you just say, like, he was at every single voluntary workout. He was at every single one. He's been here at every single voluntary workout. He doesn't have to be here. He's here. And he told us that he had something going on. We're fine with it. Cool. We'll see him when he comes back for training camp. Instead, they come out and like, oh, he's not here. It's unexcused. Congratulations to the Jets. Can't get out of their own way. Now you have a story that you didn't need to make, and they made one.
So funny. Right now, I've got NFL Network up, and they're replaying a game between the Niners and the Chiefs. I don't know if it's the Super Bowl, so don't quote me on that. But I just saw Robert Saleh on the sidelines as the defensive coordinator. Remember, it was so much easier then. Let's quick talk to Tom, who's in Baltimore. Tom, who has the best hair in sports?
Hey, Amy. Speaking of hair, have you seen any little young rabbits on your property?
I actually have. I've seen, well, a young rabbit three times. I don't know if it's the same rabbit hopping around three different times or if it's the three different babies. But yes, I have seen what appears to be younger rabbits, maybe a few months old.
Yeah, we got a few. Wife's cat got out the other day and brought one back to us on the porch.
Oh, no. My cat doesn't go outside.
Well, we try not to. They're sneaky. They'll come in the door, they'll sneak out. And I've got some juvenile squirrels running around, too, which is cool. We don't usually see them. I guess the hawks aren't around. But anyhow, I got two for you. One out of Animal Kingdom, Honey Badger.
Yep. He definitely does have good hair.
He's got, he dyes it. And the second one is Randy Johnson's got the trailer park hairdo going. Well, he's out now, but
the trailer park. Interesting.
Yeah, mustache helps pull it up. So you have to kind of dip two different joggers. But yeah, when I think of hair, I think of those two guys.
All right, those are good names. Haven't heard them yet, but definitely forgot about the Honey Badger. It was a good one.
Oh, Honey Badger. All right, you have a good weekend.
Thanks, Tom. Good to talk to you in Baltimore. Yeah, best hair in sports at A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page coming up. Part of a conversation about the baseball trade deadline. Who are the buyers? We know there might not be many sellers, but who is really anxious to make a deal? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey. Yeah.
We are about a week away from baseball's trade deadline, and it's oddly quiet, right? So many teams still involved in the wild card races, specifically in the National League. It's almost every team. And whether or not there will be sellers remains to be seen. Wanted to bring back part of my conversation with Rowan Kavner of Fox Sports. He joined us from Los Angeles earlier in the show. And instead of focusing on sellers, I asked him, who will be buying at the trade deadline?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more of those. You could pretty much make the case for probably 20 teams right now. I think, Baltimore needs pitching. I think that's been clear from the start. I expect them to get that. Now, how many top prospects are they willing to deal to really get a guy that could change things, for them in October? I think that kind of remains to be seen. There's just no teams that can put a package together quite like they can. I expect the Dodgers to be shopping at the high end of the starting pitching market, although they're just so banged up. They're going to need help in a lot of different places. You could make the case for the Yankees at a number of different spots. I think for sure they need an infielder. They need bullpen help. The teams that are kind of interesting, just sort of lurking, Cleveland needs to upgrade their starting pitching. Minnesota probably does too. And these are two teams that just aren't really willing to take on a lot of salaries. So you're probably looking at rental pieces there. And the same goes for Milwaukee. I think Fetty is a name that's really interesting for some of these teams who don't want to spend a lot, but maybe want a guy who's still under control next year. I think that's, again, where maybe a Jack Flaherty can kind of slot in. I think Houston needs starting pitching. You could probably make a case for most of these teams needing starting pitching. The Phillies could use some relief help. I think they should probably go get another outfielder. I've always thought that would be a really fun spot for Luis Robert to end up. I don't think that happens, but I do think they probably find some outfield help. Obviously, Atlanta, you know, they're going to try to replicate what happened last time Acuna went down. They're going to just kind of put a bunch of outfield pieces together, I think, and hope they can kind of find something there. And obviously, the Mets have been hot. I think they need relief help. So I feel like I've gone through probably 10, 11 teams, and there's probably 10 and 11 more that I could start naming. I think the Pirates are interesting in terms of, you know, with that starting rotation now and just how incredible Skeens has been. If they can just get a little bit of offensive pop, maybe they make some noise there in the Central. And I mean, AJ Preller with the Padres, you just sort of assume, I know they already got decent Arise, but there's just no way he sits on his hands at the deadline. I know they have some financial constraints, but I expect he'll do something probably surprising that we're not talking about.
So other than Jack, where is all this pitching going to come from?
That's a great question. And this is where you have a lot of guys who, if teams are really willing to sell and get rid of guys that are under control for a long time, they could really, really get a lot back. I mean, Crochet is probably the biggest name from the White Sox. He's ARB eligible through 2026. He's had a history of injury, and the biggest thing now is he's already thrown more than twice as many innings as he has in any previous season. So that might be the best arm to go with the deadline, but whoever acquires him is going to have to get creative with how they're going to handle the innings. I think, you know, Mason Miller from a relief standpoint is really interesting. You know, the Athletics just didn't do anything with him. He could end up going from Oakland to Sacramento to Las Vegas and be there through all of it. That's how long he's still under team control for them. But so obviously that could bring back a lot. You know, relievers are also fickle. He also has an injury history. And again, this is where, you know, teams like the Rangers, who all of a sudden they're getting back up to 500. They have a ton of pitchers who could help teams if they wanted to sell. You know, if they wanted to get rid of Eovaldi, if they wanted to get rid of Yates, you know, I think they have guys who could really help. You can make the case for and against on pretty much all these guys. I expect Eflin to maybe get dealt. I don't know that the Rays are going to want to spend that $18 million on him next year, and I think there is a team that could. And then you look at the Cubs, who all of a sudden have kind of gone into sell mode, and I think Taillon is a name that's interesting.
It's funny about the Rangers, because I would think that there would be a little more of that goodwill extending from their first World Series title, and yet you hear the phrases kind of whispered like they're ready to blow it up all of a sudden. But that whole division has scuffled.
You know, playing the White Sox can really change your outlook on the future, and that has maybe been the case this week for Texas, who ran into the right team at the right time to kind of maybe convince themselves that this is maybe worth going for. But yeah, I mean, I think there's three games back right now. I think all those thoughts that they might start selling, you know, it's hard to see that now. Maybe they do a little bit of buying, a little bit of selling. They're a little bit interesting in that, you know, if they do get DeGrom and Malley back, that maybe they could kind of deal from the back end of the rotation to, you know, have a maybe add somewhere else, something like that. But in terms of their big names, you know, Eovaldi was a really popular one, and it's just hard to really think that's going to happen now.
Rowan Kavner is with us from L.A., looking ahead to baseball's trade deadline, where it seems like it's the calm before any potential storm, if there's going to be a storm at all. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Any teams out there, any of the front runners who would say, yeah, we're good, we don't need anything, we're happy exactly where we are?
They'll probably say that. I don't know if they necessarily mean that. I think, you know, Minnesota is kind of interesting. I don't know how much they're actually going to do. I think we kind of expected them to do maybe more this offseason. And the Royals are kind of lurking here. I think they really need outfield help. I kind of wonder what we're going to see from them. And then the Red Sox as well, who've just played so well, and not necessarily in the last couple of weeks, but just kind of leading up through the start of July. You kind of wondered what side are they going to be on. I would expect them to buy, but I mean, yeah, if you're a team that's ready to contend, that's kind of in this sort of like middling spot, I think you do need to add. If you're over 500, I would expect you to add. I'm looking at, you know, some of these teams that are right around there. I can't see one of these teams that should think I'm just good. You know, I'm good to go. Obviously, Baltimore or the Yankees, you probably could stay pat, and you're getting into October, but you need help if you really want to win a World Series.
The Guardians right now are sitting on the most wins in the American League, which is incredible. You mentioned Baltimore and New York, both another win behind them. But still, it's been a lot of fun to see the Guardians after what was last year, maybe an aberration. What's the key to the Guardians playing as well as they are at this point?
Stephen Kwan's been incredible. I think Jose Ramirez is still probably one of the most underrated players, and they've gotten some power from Naylor as well. David Fry was kind of a revelation early in the year. I don't know if the offense is going to, it's like they're 61-40. So this is not a fluke. We are way too far into this to think that they don't, you know, they don't deserve this. And that bullpen, when you have that many arms that can come at a team, that'll always keep you, you know, formidable. So I think the key for them right now, I really think they need to add starting pitching. One, just to kind of take some relief off those relievers, but also just to feel confident about who you're giving the ball to in October. I mean, it's kind of incredible that they've done what they've done with the starting pitching being as mediocre as it's been so far. So they've been great. You know, the top end of those offensive players are great. They could use more lineup depth, but I really think they need to add another starting pitcher.
What are a couple of other storylines or teams that are pleasant surprises or kind of caught you off guard at this point?
Teams were talking about the Royals and Tigers as you know, are they really ready? Are they really ready? And I think they've proven that they are. And the Royals revamped that rotation, Seth Lugo has been incredible. It seems like a lot of those decisions have really worked out. Obviously, Bobby Witt is otherworldly, has just transformed into what he has, which is it's just an incredible player, really, really fun player to watch. I still think they need a little more lineup depth, but that's a team that definitely has surprised me for the better. But look, it's Cleveland and Milwaukee. I think those are the two that we didn't really expect to see this from. And the Brewers to get rid of Corbin Burns and still perform the way that they are. You know, you look behind Peralta and you go, who is pitching for this team? And they just sort of figure it out. And that offense has been good. It's had enough kind of depth there. And you know, losing Yelich is obviously a huge blow for them, but a lot of credit for how they've handled things.
How much staying power do the Braves have? Consider everything they're navigating right now.
Oof. It just sort of feels like you keep going back to a couple years ago saying that team without Acuna couldn't do it, and they did it, and they still just have so much star power, even with all these guys injured. But I am concerned. I am concerned about that team. Now, all they have to do is get into October, and I think they're still scary, and they should still get to October. I don't think that's going to be a concern. But, man, it just does not seem to be their year right now.
And yet there's still a long way to go. More with Rowan Kavner on our podcast. So from Fox Sports, he joined us earlier in the show from Los Angeles. Yeah, about a week to go before the trade deadline. Far more buyers than sellers. And yet where are these game-changing, franchise-turning athletes? Where are they? Where are the ones who can propel their franchises toward a World Series, like, say, a Justin Verlander? And that's just one example as I pull an athlete out of my history book of a brain. It's actually more like a spaghetti plate up there in the brain. It's very disorganized at times, but I do remember the Houston Astros, along with Justin Verlander, they had the trash cans, but they were able to win the World Series after they acquired him at the trade deadline. And there are others, too, for sure. That's the first one that came to mind. Who has the best hair in sports in honor of Joe Burrow? I'm saying Joe, and people are accusing me of dissing him. I'm not dissing him. Blondes have more fun, you know. At A-Law Radio, Colton, did you know that? On our Facebook page, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Heading up toward the top of the hour, I didn't have a chance to mention this earlier, but want to make sure I get it in there. Really cool honor for Coco Gauff. She will be making her Olympic debut in Paris. You may remember that she did qualify for the Tokyo Games in 21, but tested positive for COVID and had to skip them, unfortunately. Here she is at 20 years old. She's much more accomplished now. She's a Grand Slam champion in both singles and doubles, reigning U.S. Open champion. So she'll be in New York later this summer. But here she is at 20, making her Olympic debut. And she's been tabbed as the female flag bearer for the American contingent. So you've got both ends of the spectrum. A 20-year-old Coco Gauff in her first Olympics, and a 39-year-old LeBron James in his maybe final Olympics, although I wouldn't put anything past him. But yeah, how cool is that for Coco? First ever female tennis player to lead the American contingent and carry the flag. So I'm excited for her, especially since it's been a long time coming, knowing that she could have participated at age 17, but had to wait post-Tokyo and the Paris Games coming around. Now, the cool thing is, anyone who is a high-level tennis player, and essentially that's what you're getting at the Olympics, they're familiar with the clay in Paris because it's part of their circuit every year, whether it's tune-ups, whether it's the French Open, Roland Garros. I mean, they know, they're familiar with the venue. They know what it's like. And so even though it is Olympics and it's a different dream and a different goal, I should say, it still helps to be familiar with the venue and with the surface. So that's cool. Coco and LeBron James and the opening ceremonies coming up on Friday evening here in the United States. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Steve is listening in the Poconos. Steve, what do you think about the trade deadline?
Yeah, the trade deadline, and a lot of fans out there, Amy, calling up, and I tuned in a couple of years ago when I was living in Long Island. You know, the trade deadline, I'm a longtime Mets fan, classic games. You know, the dog days of summer, you know, the dog days of summer are coming around, and still the greatest game, I think. You know, Amy, you're talking about football before and collegiate sports. I mentioned to the young man on the phone, I was a gambler back in the day. Not crazy, but crazy enough where I realized. And people have to look and say, hey, you know, it's amped up all over the country, every site and this and that. So, Amy, keep doing what you're doing because you got game on the radio. You got game.
I appreciate that, Steve. Thank you so much. I hope after all this time I've got something. Otherwise, it was a waste of 25-plus years. Thank you, Steve. Have a great Thursday in the Poconos. I don't know what the point of any of that was, but I'm glad he's happy. So it's a good morning for Steve. It's a good morning to be Steve. It's always a good morning to be a Steelers fan. Right, Colton?
Oh, sure is.
See, Colton and I, we have things in common like our musical tastes. We do not have in common that I love Mike Tomlin and could listen to the man read a phone book. And Colton would prefer that his beloved Steelers move on and go a different direction. At least he's polite and respectful about it. There are Steelers fans who are just god-awful when it comes to Mike Tomlin. You want to start a fight with a bunch of Steelers fans? Really, all you have to do these days is drop in Mike Tomlin, and all of a sudden, the temperature in the room gets a lot hotter. But I'm a fan, and so I don't mind hearing from him. Actually, he's already laughing at the questions about who will be his starting quarterback or how this quarterback depth chart is going to play out. I don't know if he's off mic here or not. You might have to boost him a little bit. But yeah, listen to how he responds to quarterback questions. He's kind of heading it off at the pass.
Very carefully. You guys think I'm going to actually back myself into a corner, so you guys are going to ask me daily about the rep allocations? No way. I've been on the job too long for that.
Oh, come on. It's more fun that way. Anyway, and a big smile on his face. And yes, was asked about Russell Wilson and what he likes about his first year QB.
He likes to work. I just think that is a really good place to begin. He's highly conditioned. He brings a unique approach to the weight room, maybe for a guy that plays this position. There's a lot of interesting things about him in terms of his appetite for work that's really attractive.
Appetite for work. No one else says that.
He's a great speaker, Amy. I'll give you that, 2,000%. Like, he kind of, like, reminds me, like, no, seriously, he kind of reminds me of Obama, the way Obama would speak. Like, he describes things in ways that you wouldn't think of.
Yes, he uses all the words in his vocabulary, which is terrific. So between him and Mike McDaniel in Miami, and then Dan Campbell in Detroit, we now add Jim Harbaugh to this all-star list of quotes. And yeah, even Mike Tomlin wouldn't describe his first training camp quite like this.
The way it feels, I mean, feels like New Year's Day, you know, feels like being born, feels like coming out of the womb, you know, it's like you're in there and it's comfortable and it's safe, and now you're out, you're born. Lights are on, you know, it's bright, got chaos, people looking at you, people talking at you, and just feels good to, you know, have it happen.
It feels like being born, and then his sound effect is, because that's how easy it is, I guess, for dudes. Yes, it is. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I mentioned this earlier. Want to make sure we get to it. It's Anthony Richardson returning for Colts camp, right? And he started out with a ton of promise until he got hurt, and the Colts chose to shut down their rookie. But now, potentially, could have the strength and the combo of Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor in the backfield.
Yeah, this is the first time, so that's why it's so exciting, because it's almost like there's a whole new element now. It's like it's not, you're not just worrying about what I'm doing. It's like, you better worry about this guy, because if not, he's going to kill you.
A little insight. As Jonathan Taylor is sporting his Anthony Richardson shirt, he's talking about how this backfield, well, it's going to kill you. You better watch out. It's going to kill you. They both have a lot of strength. And remember, Jonathan Taylor was holding out last year. And so he and Richardson did not go through camp together when Anthony was kind of, well, he won the job, but he was elevated by the Colts to that starting gig, even as a rookie. I was just watching some of the conversations on Twix that are coming from Paris. Tim Reynolds covers the NBA and basketball, other sports too, but a lot of times he's doing basketball for the Associated Press. And right now, Team USA is doing a press conference in Paris. So the time change is going to be delicious for us. He's doing a press conference and kind of quoting some of the answers from the American men. And the question was, who are you looking forward to playing most? Steph Curry responds with, who's ever in the gold medal game? And Kevin Durant follows up with, great answer. I guess before the Olympics or the opening ceremonies, they're going to stop at the Olympic Village and kind of visit. Clearly, the high-priced NBA athletes are not staying in the Olympic Village. Actually, they'd be way too much a commotion for them to stay there, but they are going to stop by and visit, which I think is cool. All right, so as we wrap up our show tomorrow night into Friday, wrap up the work week, Joel Embiid has given us tomorrow night's show question. But for now, enjoy your great hair. We'll talk to you tonight. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.